First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
What's going on, America? It's Thursday afternoon on the Sports Map Radio Network. Hope we're all enjoying our Thursdays. We're going to make them that much better. Kicking it from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 to 3 Central. Wimbledon on in the background. As I've said, it's a fun, one of my favorite events of the summer, and it always is on throughout the workday, something to keep an eye on as we talk about everything going on here stateside as they play on now 7 o'clock in the evening there in London. But as far as our show today, a lot of talk with America's pastime, as we had quite an interesting kerfuffle, let's call it, with Ellie De La Cruz and the Washington Nationals last night. The Home Run Derby field is set. We got a timeline out on Mike Trout. Jeff Fletcher from the Orange County Register will join in. As we've been talking a little bit about it, it just feels like this is a patch in the Angels season that we're going to look back on and circle and say that's where it all went south for the Halos. And I'll see if he shares that sentiment as he'll join at the bottom of this hour. We get a three-team trade in the NBA yesterday and a popular movie, popular to some, overrated to me, came out 29 years ago today. So we'll get to that as well. But I mentioned one, Ellie De La Cruz, and he continues to be the talk of Major League Baseball in a lot of ways. And I guess he didn't come up early enough to be an all-star. I don't think he made it, but I feel like we need him at the all-star game because it's, as I said, this guy is one of the most exciting players in baseball, and he's only 21 years old, and, you know, declined an invite to the Home Run Derby, I just saw. You know, obviously, we'll have plenty of time to see him on this big stage, I'm sure. But last night, I don't think many people thought we'd get some juice out of the Reds and the Nationals, but that's exactly what we got, as De La Cruz had a sensor on his knob and of the bat that he was using, and manager for the Washington, Dave Martinez, asked for the bat to be examined. Here's how that sounded.
And Ellie De La Cruz is now going to be, he's going to have his bat looked at.
A bat check of De La Cruz?
On the knob end?
Does he have some kind of device augmenting attached there that he's not allowed to have?
It's probably a jetpack.
That's just to keep him on the ground so he doesn't go into the atmosphere.
Well, we haven't seen a bat check in quite a long time. Of course, it brings back the memory of George Brett and the Pine Tar game.
It almost looks as if our umpire is saying, I haven't seen that before.
No.
Are they even uncertain about the legality or purpose of that knob? They conference up. Now, De La Cruz used this yesterday. Adrian Johnson, the second base umpire, is our crew chief. Quinn Walcott is on the plate. And we believe it's the same knob that he's used the entirety of his time in the big leagues.
You know what De La Cruz ought to do? He ought to go ahead and take it off the bat, sign it, and give it to David Martinez.
So, obviously, that's the best we can do as a radio platform in showing you, you know, and doing our best to entail what happened last night. But the question is bizarre from Martinez because, again, this guy has been in the big leagues now for about 6 weeks, I want to say, middle of May, I think he got called up. And he obviously has played long enough now in the majors to where if there was an opposing manager that was a little suspect of his bat, then that would have come up, I would have thought, sooner than what we've seen. But anyway, De La Cruz is questioned about his bat, and during the game, there was a check done on the bat, and I believe for his second at bat, he had to steer clear of the normal bat he used. He's been up for a month, by the way. June 6th was his major league debut, so exactly a month. Anyway, the bat is approved, and here's what happened on De La Cruz's third at bat of the game.
De La Cruz trying to add to it. He crushes. Upper deck right center. A De La Cruz missile. He sizzled it into the second deck. A 5-1 Reds lead.
And, of course, that was a no-doubter off Ellie's bat. And right after he hit the ball 455 feet, he tapped on the knob and basically it was his way of saying, you want to come look at this again?
He pointed right at Martinez, too.
Did he?
Yeah, he tapped the knob and then pointed right at him.
Yeah, and I think it's awesome. And I think anybody that likes baseball or likes sports, because, listen, sports are supposed to be fun. We're supposed to enjoy it. This is supposed to be entertainment. And that's everything this kid is. So I've never understood the get off my lawn old school people, because I'm sure there are people that don't like what he did last night but have no problem with Martinez requesting a check. And so it's like, all right, Davey Martinez, if you're going to request that the guy's bat gets checked, you're within your right to do that. But if you're wrong, then he's within his right to say, see, you want to look at it again? Because think about it like this. If you're not doing anything illegal and someone suspects you of doing something illegal, that's a bit defaming on your character. And you should take that a little personally. And you should, you know, talk your mess back. So that's how I look at this. I think it's fine if Davey Martinez asks for a check if he thinks something's up. But it's also fine for Ellie doing what he did. And that's my biggest problem with the old school get off my lawn baseball crowd, is it seems like there is a bit of a double standard, right? Where a pitcher can be, you know, a different example, but, you know, a common one is bat flipping. People don't like. So a pitcher is allowed to be mad over getting shown up over a bat flip, but the reason that the bat was flipped was because the pitcher allowed a 500-foot home run or whatever, and that's just okay? Again, you stop this by just getting the guys out. And so Ellie De La Cruz showed a lot of personality last night, and, you know, I look at what the NFL has done with celebrations. They used to be very, you know, anal about, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that, 15 yards every time Terrell Owens scored a touchdown or whoever else was a big celebrator. And now they've lightened up and we see these choreographed celebrations and it's fun. You know, like we've seen teams sit down and play duck, duck, goose. You know, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and all the Chiefs have had some fun ones when Tyreek was in Kansas City. So
you can even go back to like Chad Ochocinco.
Yes,
some of his great celebrations
too. But he would get that was still when they were cracking down and flagging people for it. You know what? Justin Jefferson started doing the gritty, and I think a lot of people followed that. So it's all part of sports, and Ellie De La Cruz. I got a friend of mine who's not that into baseball, that was like, this guy's awesome. Like, I love this guy. I mean, Belmer, you came in today having not known about this. And I said, oh, you got to watch. And you're like, this guy might be my favorite player.
Yeah. Oh, as soon as I seen it, I was like, this is what baseball needs.
Yeah.
Like, they need more of this.
Yeah. It was awesome. So.
Is baseball in a better place now? With the rule changes,
I think,
with these exciting players?
You know, I mean, you think about Shohei Ohtani and Ronald Acuna Jr. and Ellie De La Cruz even. Corbin Carroll in Arizona and all these guys. I mean, we're going to get to it more with the Angels. Maybe not the Angels as they dwindling down the standings, but, you know, a lot of these guys in the mix for playoff spots, you know. So I think it's in a good spot. And, you know, guys like this are, you know, Vladdy Jr., you know, like exciting players for the sport. And, you know, hopefully it continues. The Reds win the game last night on the diamond. They've won four straight and seven of their last eight heading into today's. They're in a rain delay right now in the nation's capital. Getaway game before the Reds take on the Milwaukee Brewers in what will be a pivotal weekend series to take us into the All-Star break. So the Reds are hot. Everybody, I think, is really, if you're not a Reds fan, you're probably behind the Reds because they're a fun team to root for. They're essentially, as we talked about in show prep, they're kind of like a National League Orioles. Not as good as the Orioles, but similar in terms of, okay, you know what? They build up their farm, and now these guys are getting to the big leagues, and they're fun to watch. And, you know, it's neat when, in any sport, when those fruits of a rebuild get to the highest level, and it all kind of comes together. And that's what I think we're seeing in Southwest Ohio. We'll take a timeout, and we'll come back. A few other MLB headlines to discuss. Chief among them, the Home Run Derby field is finalized. So we'll get to that on the other side. My name is Greg Frank. It is a Thursday afternoon. First Team Sports, Sports Map Radio.
This is First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
Gosh, I love Queen. It's a good band. And I just, it's one of those I'd like to have been alive for. I'm not a huge music guy. Like, I don't go to a lot of concerts, but there's a handful of bands that you hear and, you know, like, it'd be pretty cool to see one of their concerts. Now, usually, those are the bands where it would have cost an arm and a leg to go, so I probably wouldn't have gone anyway. But
it's probably hard to get tickets regardless, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, I bet you know, Queen and the Beatles and, you know, some of these all-time bands. The Stones are, like, the hottest show in town. So, you know, it depends on how much would you fork up. Like, how much would you fork up for a concert of a band you like?
Of a band I like? Yeah. Anything under 150, I'd probably
See,
do it.
I think that's fair, but I don't think that's... If it's a popular enough band, I don't think you're ever seeing a ticket for below 150.
That's true, 100%. Yeah.
So just a thought that ran through my mind on this Thursday afternoon. But we did get the Home Run Derby field has now been finalized. There are a couple of spots still open, which have now been claimed by Luis Robert. By the way, I don't know if that's just Americanizing his name or if that's how he says it, but for a while I thought it was Luis Robert.
It is Luis Robert, and then people started saying Robert. Right.
Okay,
yeah.
I think Robert is way cooler.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too.
Anyway, he's actually the number one seed in the bracket, for what it's worth, and Adolis Garcia from Texas has joined the field. So our lineup is set for Monday night. Number one seed Luis Robert against number eight seed Adley Rutschman. Number four seed Adolis Garcia against number five seed Randy Arozarena. Number two seed Pete Alonso against number seven seed Julio Rodriguez. And Mookie Betts is the three seed taking on Vlad Guerrero Jr. Honestly, this is a pretty good field. I mean, we were talking a little bit about this in the last segment about how, you know, it feels like baseball's in a pretty healthy spot. And I think when you look at this, you have, obviously, Robert is probably somebody that people outside of Chicago might not know that well. I mean, he was a pretty hailed prospect coming through the White Sox organization, but with the exception of there's so many things about 2020 that I just don't even remember if it happened or not. Like, I don't know if the White Sox made the COVID playoffs or not, but I know they were in the playoffs in 2021 and lost to the Astros. And then, obviously, this season and last season, haven't gone as well for the Southsiders. And Robert also has had struggles staying healthy in his career, which, you know, have obviously injuries have plagued him. But he's healthy this year, and he's raking with an OPS of 916, OPS plus 147, 25 dingers already. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see. You know, he's 25 years old. Usually, I'm going to look right now at what his contractual obligation is to the Chicago White Sox. Yeah, so he's still under contract for quite a while, so I don't think that he's somebody that they would potentially dangle. I mean, the White Sox are going to sell at the deadline, but Luis Robert, you would think this is a keeper for their franchise, and he is the number one seed in this field, and again, is a very exciting player that just needs to stay on the field because he can you know, do a lot of different things in the outfield and at the plate for the Southsiders. And then, you know, he's facing Adley Rutschman. And, you know, Adley Rutschman is, it's probably either him or Sean Murphy now, like, as the best catchers in baseball. I mean, for a while it was JT Realmuto. And Adley Rutschman was one of the biggest, I saw this on MLB Network, and I agree with it. They're talking more draft because the baseball draft is on Sunday it starts. They always do it at the All-Star game. And Adley Rutschman, Dan O'Dowd, who I like, former Rockies GM, who's on MLB Network now, said that Rutschman was the biggest draft prospect since Bryce Harper. And I remembered when Rutschman was billed as this amazing defensive catcher who could also rake at Oregon State, which was a pretty good baseball program there in the Pacific Northwest. And we talk about these teams that are rising in their respective sports with young players. And the Orioles, I mean, this is the face of the Baltimore Orioles already at 25 years old. And, you know, his, you know, he doesn't have as many home runs as Robert, but 375 on base percentage already. So I think it's, while he's not the biggest of power hitters, I think good to see him in this event as another rising star in the game. And then the Adolis Garcia, Randy Arosa thing's interesting because we talked about this on Friday with Kennedy Landry from MLB.com covers the Rangers. These guys are good friends and I believe roomed together at one point and they're going to face off against each other. And listen, this is what All-Star games and these kinds of contests should be about. Like, it's not serious. It's an exhibition. So let these two guys have fun going against each other in a friendly competition like the Home Run Derby. So I think that's cool. The Pete Alonso versus Julio Rodriguez thing is interesting because Pete Alonso is is he a defending champion? I know he won this thing at least once. I think in 2021 he won, maybe 2019. I know he's won. I mean, he hit some nukes. And the two-time Home Run Derby champion, he won in 2019 and 2021. So maybe he's like the San Francisco Giants of the Home Run Derby where he just wins every other year. And, you know, in 2023 now, maybe he'll win again. But he's going – so you have a mammoth home run hitter. They call him the Polar Bear in Queens against – the host guy, Julio Rodriguez, of course, the All-Star game in Seattle. So that's a good matchup. And then Mookie Betts and Vladdy Jr., I mean, those are two of the best players in baseball. So this is a pretty good field. And I think the big thing with baseball that we've struggled with at times is showcasing the stars. And I think sometimes even with the Home Run Derby, you'll see guys that are just home run hitters that aren't, you know, Chris Davises of the world will be in the Home Run Derby. And, you know, maybe they can hit home runs, but that's not, I don't think that's who you want in the Home Run Derby. Like, you want some names in there. Like, Ellie De La Cruz supposedly turned down an invite to the Home Run Derby. Maybe he's a little afraid about screwing up his swing early on in his major league career. You know, just get your big faces in the biggest of events. And I think for the most part, that's been accomplished here. So that's your Home Run Derby field. Luis Robert, Adley Rutschman, Adolis Garcia, Randy Arozarena, Pete Alonso, Julio Rodriguez, Vladdy Jr., and Mookie Betts. Also, we get some official news on Mike Trout's timetable. And I thought it was going to be at least a month, and that's about at least what it's going to be. 4 to 8 weeks, the Pride of Millville, New Jersey, will be sidelined for the Los Angeles Angels. And, I mean, now on one hand, you could say, well, he wasn't having that great of a year anyway. But we're going to obviously talk more about this diagnosis and this timetable with Jeff Fletcher in the next segment. Covers the Angels for the Orange County Register there in Southern California. And kind of where the Angels go from here, because they lost again last night, and they are reeling. And this is they got swept by the Padres. They play the Dodgers now, so they have off today, and then they play the Dodgers this weekend. So this is a team that is in a tailspin, and they better come out of it soon, because in the American League, there's enough teams here where you're going to dig yourself perhaps too deep of a hole to dig out of. And as I brought this up yesterday, as much as we might look at Seattle in the American League and say, wow, they're really underachieving, now, and for a while we maybe looked at the Angels in the American League West as well and said, the Angels are doing okay this year. Maybe they're now the Angels are only a game ahead of Seattle in the standings. And Seattle's actually ahead in the loss column. So, it's a negative turning point here for the Angels that I don't think is going to spin back in a positive direction. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I don't think they're going to trade Ohtani, and that's going to be that for 2023 for the Angels, I think, at least. So Jeff Fletcher will shed some light on that in the next segment. And lastly, if you haven't played it, it's all over Twitter, Immaculate Grid, really fun baseball trivia type game. It just stimulates the brain when you got to think about guys that played for at least two teams or had a milestone of 200 strikeouts or 500 home runs on a certain team. So it's a quick little, you got to get nine guesses. You got to get all nine because that's what's called the Immaculate Grid, and inspired by an immaculate inning by a pitcher. Nine pitches, nine strikes. So it's fun. It, as I said, stimulates the brain a little bit. And, if you're a baseball geek. And the thing is, too, a lot of times this has happened to me, too, where, Brian McDonald, one of our coworkers here at Sportsman Radio, came in a couple days ago and goes, do you play Immaculate Grid? And I said, yes. And you had to guess a 40-save reliever for the Twins. And I immediately came up with that one and said, Joe Nathan. The first thing he says to me was, yeah, I played today. I totally forgot about Joe Nathan's career. And, there are those kinds of aha, enlightenments where it's like, oh, that's right. And I kind of enjoy those as well. So, Immaculate Grid, if you're a baseball nerd, check it out. It's a lot of fun. We're going to take a timeout. And as I said, coming up on the other side from the Orange County Register, Jeff Fletcher will join as the Halos are in a free fall. Can they dig their way out of it? Or is this headed for another putridly below 500 Angel season, as they're now just one game over 500? What is going on with the Angels? We'll discuss with Jeff Fletcher. First Name Sports continues on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, let's go out to the Progressive guest line now as we continue a lot of baseball talk here to start the show. Jeff Fletcher joins from the Orange County Register and the SoCal News Group. He covers the Angels and also has a book out, which we're happy to promote as well, Showtime, the inside story of Shohei Ohtani and the greatest baseball season ever played. Jeff, thank you for your time. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Simple question to start, perhaps a difficult answer. What's going on with the Angels right now?
Well, they got a lot of guys hurt, and that's really put a dent in their lineup. I mean, they got right now Mike Trout, Anthony Rendon, Brandon Drury, Gio Urshela, Zach Neto, Logan Ohapi are all out. And those are all guys that they had, as everyday players back in April. So that certainly doesn't help. They also ran into a couple teams, the White Sox and Padres, that were actually much better teams than they've been playing. And I think they sort of came a little closer to their expected level when they ran into the Angels. So that didn't help. And then they play the Dodgers, too. So it's all been kind of a perfect storm of struggle for them in the last couple weeks.
Well, when you mention the injuries, that seems to have been – this has been an ongoing problem now for – Mike Trout and Anthony Rendon. So, I mean, how much can you look at the way this team was designed and say, well, I understand that some of these guys are pretty good players when they're available, but they've been unavailable for so long, maybe it's hard to rely on some of these guys.
Well, that's exactly the way what they planned on when they built the team in the offseason, and they built much more depth, and that is the reason that we're sitting here talking about how they've had all these injuries and they're a game over 500 instead of 10 games under 500, which is where they were this time last year. So it's better. They've been able to, you know, support themselves with some more depth. You know, they got Mike Moustakas and Eduardo Escobar and these kind of guys to fill in, whereas last year they were relying on like Jack Mayfield and Phil Gosselin. So it is better, but they do need to get their guys back if they're going to really contend.
Yeah, and I mean, the way you talk about it there, you know, it seems like you still think there's hope that that can happen, or is this like the straw that breaks the camel's back on their season?
Well, I mean, they're four games out of a wild card spot with 74 to play or something like that. So, I mean, you cannot say that they're out of it. And they are going to get a lot of these guys back. You know, the Trout injury is, you know, probably 6 weeks. So that still leaves you a decent chunk of season. They've still got a lot of room for improvement just on their starting pitchers that are healthy. So that is something that, that certainly could be better. You know, they're not giving up. And they're, you know, certainly not going to trade Ohtani, which is the next question you're going to ask me. Because they are close enough to try, and they haven't made the playoffs in 2014. So if they have a chance, they're going to go for it.
Yeah, so, you know, with that said then, I mean, I feel like you either have to go one way or another then, and you mentioned it, they're not going to trade Ohtani. So I would expect the Angels to be very aggressive then in trying to end this playoff drought, because if you just kind of stick in between, you know, kind of hang out in the middle, that's a pretty easy way to alienate Ohtani, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, when they had some of these injuries, you know, in the last month, they went and they got Mike Moustakas and Eduardo Escobar, like, right away. And those are certainly not, like, huge difference-making guys, but it is at least an effort to not just say, oh, well, we're just going to use, you know, the guys we have in the minors and you know, Kevin Padlo. We're not just going to stick him in there. So I think that shows you that they're serious about giving it a run. And, you know, if there are players who are available that can help them, you know, at the deadline, they're probably going to try to make some trades. You know, they don't have a hugely deep farm system to acquire those guys, and there's probably not going to be a whole bunch of them available because, you know, there's so many teams that, you know, in those two central divisions that seem like bad teams but are still in the race because their divisions are so bad that it might make it, you know, tough to get those guys. But I certainly think that that's what they're going to try to do.
So we talked a lot about their injuries. Do you believe that just – I mean, you've seen the team every day now, and, you know, for half the season, obviously they were playing well. Fully healthy, whether they get there or not is a different story, but fully healthy, is this a playoff-caliber team?
I mean, if they have all their guys and they're playing, you know, to the level they can, then I think certainly they're one of the six best teams in the American League. But the problem is that's hard to do, and there's other good teams too. I mean, the way I look at it right now, I feel like the Yankees, Blue Jays, and Angels – one of those three teams that's going to get the number three wild card spot. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like the Astros, Rangers, it's going to be one of them will win the division and the other one will get the number two wild card spot. And the Orioles will get the number one wild card spot.
Sure.
So I think that's what we're looking at is those three. And, you know, the Yankees have some issues too. You know, with Aaron Judge being out and the Blue Jays are very up and down. So I certainly think if the Angels get some guys back and get on a little roll, they definitely can be in the mix with those teams.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the way the book came together. Showtime, the inside story of Shohei Ohtani and the greatest baseball season ever played. Just how'd you go about making this a reality?
Well, the book actually started in 2018 when Ohtani first reached the big leagues, and I think nobody really thought he could be a successful two-way player then because he was really bad in spring training. And right away in April when he did it, I started writing the book, and it was pretty incredible. And then unfortunately he got hurt in June and ended up having Tommy John surgery. So the whole project was sort of dead for a long time. And then finally in 2021, he came back and it was great again. And so I sort of picked up where I left off and finished the project. And I didn't expect that he was going to do it again in 2022. And now he's doing it again in 2023. But it's been a pretty incredible ride to watch, and it's certainly something that you don't take for granted because this is not anything that any of us have seen in our lifetimes.
Yeah, I mean, how do you think his kind of two-way abilities will age as he moves through his 30s?
I mean, nobody knows. We have no idea, literally, because nobody has done it. He seems to be fine right now, and I'm sure he's going to be fine next year and the year after, but then, you know, I have no idea what he's going to be when he's 35. You know, if he's going to be, you know, not even doing one or just kind of mediocre at them, I mean, I have no clue.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting to see how teams go about putting a price tag on that because there's no precedent for it. It's going to be a lot of money no matter what, but it's really going to be fascinating.
Well, you know, Jeff, as we're talking with Jeff Fletcher here from the Orange County Register, covers the Angels, and I think it'll be interesting if the pieces do fall into place in the second half for the Angels and they get healthy and they get hot and they snag that last wild card. Would that be enough to keep him, or is this a foregone conclusion, you think, that this guy goes to free agency? Because I think that his free agency would be like a LeBron James-level free agency in terms of the amount of teams lining up and the offers that he would have.
Well, I think that's definitely true. There are going to be a lot of teams that are definitely going to want him and are going to offer him lots of money. I think that it's not a foregone conclusion that he does not want to come back to the Angels, though. I think he is very comfortable with the Angels. There's a lot of things about him that are different than other players that we talked about that you don't know exactly how that's going to fit in with another team, and you know how it's going to fit in with the Angels. Everything from the fact that, you know, he's pretty shielded from the media. He's basically only has to talk to the media after he pitches, and that's it. And, you know, all of these seem like little things, but you just don't know how it's going to work with another team. I think he really wants to win, so the Angels have to win in order to be in the conversation. But if they do win, you know, at least enough for him to believe that there's hope that they can continue to win in the future, I think that they certainly are a very strong contender for him. Now, if they tank the rest of the season in the second half and, you know, things look really bad, then I think that probably takes them out of it. But as long as they can remain competitive and even not necessarily if they make the playoffs, but if they finish strong and a lot of their young players, perhaps more importantly, look like they can be good in the future, Logan Ohapi, Zach Neto, Reed Detmers, that kind of thing. If that gives him hope that, you know, next year will be the big step, he still might choose to stay.
All right, Jeff, last one for you then. In terms of how they upgrade this roster in the few weeks after the trade deadline, what do you think are the top priorities? A few weeks after the All-Star break, excuse me.
Yeah, I would say they probably need a bat at this point just because they have so many injuries. And they could really fit that guy at any position just because they have so many of their current guys can play multiple positions. So really the best bat that's available anywhere probably would help them. A starting pitcher would probably be nice, and a reliever would be nice. So pretty much anything that they could get would be helpful. But if I were prioritizing right now, I'd say it would be a bat and then probably a starting pitcher.
All right, there he is, Jeff Fletcher from the Orange County Register, kind enough to join us as we will keep an eye on what happens with the Angels, a pivotal rest of July for them as they try and avoid the hole getting deeper in the American League wildcard picture. Jeff, thank you for your time. Enjoy the rest of your week.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, we will take a timeout and we'll come back. A three-team trade in the NBA to discuss. Celtics got something up their sleeves, I think. We'll discuss exactly what was involved with the basketball team in Beantown on the other side. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, well, a lot of baseball to open today's show, and so we want to shout out our friends at Baseball Barbecue. As our friends at Baseball Barbecue have done it again, makers of patented bat handle barbecue tools and cutting boards, Baseball Barbecue can customize their products or engrave them with logos of your favorite major league teams. For the upcoming Baseball Midsummer Classic, Baseball Barbecue will make special commemorative home plate cutting boards engraved with the All-Star Game logo and the names and facsimile signatures of every player. The products are built to last, fun, and functional, a must-have for baseball fans and serious grillers alike. Visit www.baseballbbq.com and use code SPORTSMAP20 for 20% off your order today. You know, Belmer, I'm not much of an All-Star game guy, and I don't think you are either, but would you, if you could go to one of these, would it amplify your interest, or would you just say, hey, this is just an exhibition, I don't really care, even if I'm offered a ticket?
Well, it would amplify my interest. I mean, these are the best players in the league. So, I mean, if I get an opportunity
but
to
like,
go see
them. They are, but, like, nobody's trying.
I think they try more than, you know, you get in the other sports, especially
in
the
baseball,
Pro Bowl,
yeah.
The NBA All-Star Game. Like, you get more effort
in the baseball
out of these guys, yeah,
now,
for sure.
Why do you think that is? Like, that perception around the baseball All-Star Game has been out there for a while, that it's, like, the closest one to a real game.
Probably because your chance of getting injured is the least in that game as well, I believe. Like, in basketball, you can pull a hammy. In football, nobody's trying because you don't want to get a concussion or something like that.
Yeah.
In baseball, you can still hit a home run and pimp the home run. And
that's true.
You can still strike somebody
out on a nasty curve
and, like, show out. And I think your risk of messing something up or injury is a lot lower.
Sure. Yeah. So, anyway, thanks to our friends at a Baseball Barbecue there. All right. The NBA offseason continues to provide some content, and a couple of teams here. This is a three-team trade. One of the teams, the Spurs, involved in this trade, they don't really do a lot here that make me all that interested in talking more about them. It's the Mavs, the Spurs, and the Celtics that make this trade. And the Spurs end up getting Reggie Bullock and a pick swap from Dallas. And Reggie Bullock's a veteran wing guy. You know, I'm sure they're looking. They're at that stage where they're rebuilding, looking for culture guys to try and figure out how things fit with Victor Wembanyama and, you know, just nurture an NBA environment for the guys. So that's kind of all I look at with them getting Reggie Bullock there. But I think both Dallas and Boston yesterday, and Dallas has been pretty active overall in the offseason, but I think both of those teams, in their involvement in this trade tells me something. Let's start with the Celtics. As the Celtics moved Grant Williams, and they get multiple second-round picks coming their way. And so when you see this, you're thinking, why would a team that is competing for an NBA championship subtract a player out of its rotation for multiple second-rounders? And then you think back to what they did earlier in the offseason. Their involvement with the Marcus Smart trade and shipping him out and bringing in Kristaps Porzingis. Now, Porzingis says, you know, he's a much different player than Grant Williams. But they're both front court pieces. Porzingis several inches taller. But regardless, the way I look at this is these two moves for Boston in shipping out Marcus Smart and bringing in a couple of second rounders, that they are trying to load up for a Damian Lillard trade. Because now they've moved Smart, so there are obviously some more minutes to be had in their backcourt. And listen, not that a couple of second-round picks, I'm not going to read too much into that, but obviously Portland's looking for draft assets. And you've added to your cupboard of draft assets in moving on from Grant Williams, who you probably felt was a little bit expendable anyway because you did acquire a front-court player, albeit a very different kind of front-court player in Kristaps Porzingis. So that's what I think is happening there. I think the Celtics are trying to position themselves to where they can at least make a competitive offer for Lillard. And listen, again, I don't care what Lillard and his agent say. If he were traded to the Celtics, is he really not going to play for the Celtics? Like, I'm just not buying it. He'd wake up and see Jason Tatum on his team and Kristaps Porzingis. Maybe they would have to, Jaylen Brown would go to the third team or whatever. So I'm not entirely sure that the Celtics would be able to keep him. But regardless, Boston's going to have a pretty competitive roster still post Damian Lillard trade if they made this happen. And Damian Lillard's just going to be like, no, I'm not playing for you. I'm only playing for the Heat, even though I'm under contract for 3 years with a player option. Like, These executives can't be this stupid and think that he should only be traded to the Heat. And so if you're a contender like the Celtics, it makes sense to at least kick the tires on this and make some phone calls and position yourself to now, you know, have some room in your backcourt and some more draft picks to maybe make it work. Now, maybe Brad Stevens just doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, there's a complete polar opposite here. But this is a guy that is relatively new to running basketball operations. And he's doing it for one of the most storied franchises in the National Basketball Association. And, you know, if anybody should have known Marcus Smart's value to that locker room and to the Celtics culture, it would have been Stevens, who was the coach for Boston for quite a while. And why you would trade a rotation player. Now, listen, Grant Williams is not an all-NBA player by any stretch of the imagination, but somebody that played meaningful playoff minutes for them, why you would trade him for picks, you know, again, there has to be some deeper meaning to it, or there is no deeper meaning, and they're just kind of stupid. And Brad Stevens isn't that smart. Again, polar opposite outcomes there, but a lot of food for thought there on the Celtics side of this trade. And then the other team that made a lot of noise in this trade is the team that got Grant Williams, and that's the Dallas Mavericks. Because you look at Dallas now, and there is a concerted effort to beef up their front court with what they've done. Dallas has been one of the more active teams in the NBA offseason so far. They have now added Grant Williams, Rashawn Holmes, and then in the draft, Derek Lively and Olivier Max-Prosper. All those guys are front court players. And so it was a very obvious attempt to beef up their front court and their defense, because Dallas, it was a swinging saloon door. I mean, it was like you could just roll right through them and score. Like, it was, that was the problem. That was why they didn't make the playoffs. Like, they were scoring, but they were not putting up much defensive resistance at all. And so Dallas needed to get better defensively and upgrade its front court, and they've made a very intense effort at doing that. They're not going to get Matisse Thybulle, as that offer sheet was matched by the Portland Trailblazers, but Thybulle is a strong defensive wing as well. So I think the Mavericks were very much set out on improving their defense this offseason and acquiring players that would help them do that. And, you know, listen, Grant Williams is one of those like tenacious, tough to play against guys who should give you a little bit of bite in the front court. So I think that I like a lot of what Dallas is doing. I expect the Mavericks to be back in the playoffs next year. Now, are they going to get back to the conference finals? I don't know. You know, are they going to forever regret how things ended with Jalen Brunson? Potentially. But listen, say what you want about Kyrie Irving. On the basketball court, that dude can score. And so can Luka Doncic. So you have those two. You're getting a lot of offense every single night. And if you start defending well enough, then you become a good basketball team pretty quickly because of the raw talent that Doncic and Kyrie are providing you. I still don't know if Jason Kidd's a good coach. You know, I'm not sure how these pieces are all going to come. You know, I mentioned Max Prosper and Derek Lively. Those are rookies. How much are they going to be able to make an impact right away? But this is clearly a Mavs team that, when they made the Kyrie trade last year at the trade deadline, that's the kind of move you're making to win right away. And they're still thinking that, and it's just a matter of refining their roster and adding a lot more defensive menaces. And they've done that. So I think this is a very interesting trade from both Dallas and Boston. Dallas more so because we're not looking at what might be next the way we are with Boston, where it's like, all right, now they have opened up a backcourt space. They've added draft picks. They moved off Grant Williams' salary. So what's going on here? And with Dallas, it's like, I think they're ready for the most part. I wouldn't expect a lot else from Dallas. I think they're ready to kind of start their season with the fact that they've added more defense. They know that they can score. And where does that leave them in a Western Conference that, after the Denver Nuggets, really looks wide open? All right, we will take a timeout. A prestigious movie came out 29 years ago today. Not one that I care for. I'll explain on the other side. And we got a fun hypothetical segment coming in about 20 minutes as well. First Name Sports on a Thursday on the Sports Map Radio Network.